morning. My name is Tom, and my last name is Ellenbost. And I was with the Ellenbost clan last night or yesterday, most of the day, for our Christmas party. And like maybe many of your families, maybe not all of them, but my family is getting bigger right now. Like there was a period where it was kind of all about the same size, and now it's starting to get a little bigger, and there are like boyfriends around and stuff like that. And it's not to the point yet where I don't know people, right? But that may actually come as I get a little older, either because it's bigger or I'm getting older. I don't know. I was just thinking a second ago about being a part of Harbor Churches, and Harbor Churches has become a big family. And I'm one of the pastors in Harbor Churches, which is five churches around the area here, that this Christmas about 6,000 people will call home. So we don't all know each other anymore. And I'm not here that often, but I'm glad to be here this morning. Again, my name's Tom, and would love to connect with you sometime. If this morning or some other time, feel free to reach out. If there's something that I talk about this morning that you want to talk about more, I would love to do that. Back to the Ellenbost clan, because I love talking about my family. I was with my family yesterday, and we did what we always do on Christmas. We gathered, and we did the gifts and the food and all that kind of stuff. I ate way too much food yesterday, but it was good. And one of the things that my dad always does and has done for a long time is before we do gifts and all of that, my dad pulls out the Bible, and he opens up the Christmas story, and he reads from the book of Luke, and he reads the Christmas story. And I was thinking about it, because I do that every year too with my kids, and it's just become a tradition that my dad has passed down to me. And and as you read that story, and you maybe hear about the Christmas stuff, or you see stuff, and there's all these little pieces of the story, and I realize when we read the Luke story, we're leaving part of the story out. If you haven't noticed, maybe you want to pull out your Bible this week and take a look. Matthew chapters 1 and 2. Actually, you can pull it out now if you have one with you on your phone, because I'm going to talk about some passages here this morning. They'll come up on the screen too. But Matthew chapters 1 and 2 and Luke chapters 1 and 2 are really sort of the chapters for this season. And we're going to talk about something so when the kids are all snuggled in their beds on Christmas Eve, and then they come down and they gather around the Christmas tree, you know, for maybe we have like hot chocolate for breakfast that day, and you know, before we tear into the gifts, we read the Christmas story. We don't read this one that I'm going to read to you this morning. And it's about a guy named Herod, and it starts this way, and this is from Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 3. After, so it's just after Jesus was born, in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east, we sang about this morning, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who was born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him. Now, I want you to notice that. I underlined it here for you. He was disturbed. I want you to hang on to that, because we're going to talk about that this morning. Herod was disturbed. In fact, he wasn't just disturbed at this morning, at this moment. He was disturbed at this moment because Jesus was to be called the Messiah, the King of the Jews, and Herod wanted to be called King of the Jews and to be the Messiah. And so when he hears that there's another one, that's disturbing, right? Because it's his kingdom that he wants to manage here. And he hears about someone else. So he's disturbed. But not just that. Herod was kind of a disturbed individual, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But what you see in this moment is pretty typical of this Herod. Herod sets in motion a series of events that are incredibly disturbing. In fact, we usually leave this part of the story out of the story. It happens right after Christmas, and it's like, what do we preach on January 30? Should we preach about the death of the infants? No, let's skip over that. That's literally kind of how the conversation goes. But we're going to look at this morning a little bit early before Christmas. Matthew chapter 2, this is verse 16. So the story goes on a little bit. Herod says, I want you to find the infant, and I want you to come back to me and tell me so that I can worship him. But Herod doesn't really want to worship this Jesus. Herod wants to eliminate this Jesus. So we get to verse 16 where some things have happened. The Magi have heard in a dream not to go back to Herod, and so they leave another way, and Herod is upset. So when Herod realized, this is verse 16, that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. So first he's disturbed, now he's furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Herod was not a good dude. Herod was disturbed. And Herod was furious. And what happens when Herod gets furious? You know, this actually isn't the only time that Herod is disturbed or kind of like all shook up inside or in a tizzy. Historians describe him, in fact, as kind of a paranoid tyrant. A Let me tell you a little bit about Herod. He was responsible for building some huge fortresses. I'm just going to show you three of them this morning. The first one's called Masada, and maybe you've seen some of these before. This is literally a fortress built in the side of a huge rock mountain. And you can see the backside of it just to get some perspective. This is a pretty big deal, right? Herod builds this huge fortress. And this fortress is really interesting because it overlooks all of the area around the Judean desert and the Dead Sea. From this spot, Herod could keep an eye on his kingdom. Herod builds something else. It's called the Herodian, which is the next one. And I don't know the exact details about this, but I think Jeremy can tell you the truth about this. He knows more about this than I do. But I think that whole mini mountain there was actually built by slaves. They carried all the dirt and built this thing up. This is the Herodian. This is a kind of Herod's palace. And it was from here that he could actually look over Jerusalem and, "Oh, little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie." Right? This is where Herod sat there and looked over Bethlehem. And this is probably where the Magi came to meet with Herod. And said, see the star, and over there in Bethlehem, which Herod looks down the mountain, over there is where your rival is being born, and we're going to go meet him. And Herod says, well, I'm going to do something about that. Let me show you one more just to give you a sense of this guy's power. This is Caesarea Maritima. It's basically, it's a whole harbor city that he builds. Now, Rome was, of course, the big power during this time, and Herod was one of the kind of puppet kings of Rome, and so he had to kind of bow to Rome. He builds this as kind of a place between Jerusalem and Rome. It's a place of all kinds of trade that happens. It's a huge place. In fact, Pontius Pilate, interesting part of the story, Pontius Pilate, who, if you know the story of Jesus, and if you don't, that's okay, there's this part where Jesus goes on trial, and Pontius Pilate is the one who is overseeing the trial. Pontius Pilate lived in Caesarea Maritima with his armies, and it was from here that he went to Jerusalem for Jesus' trial. So Herod builds all these big fortresses and kingdoms. He was a guy who wasn't just disturbed, but he did something with that disturbance in his heart. Herod was the guy who wasn't just disturbed, but he tried to control the things that disturbed him. He would build fortresses and castles, and he would build all of these things so that he could control everything around him, all the citizens in his area. Herod was disturbed. In fact, some people call him crazy. Now, I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but Herod had 10 wives. You laughed, not me. That wasn't me. No, it wasn't his wives that made him crazy. It wasn't his wives, but it was his children. Because what happened is, he was worried about Jesus because Jesus could take the throne from him. Herod was also worried about his own children because they became a threat to the throne. Because if dad's gone, guess who gets to sit on the throne? And so Herod is known for killing several of his children. In fact, not just his children, his favorite wife, Miriam, her brother was the high priest. And the high priest was sort of working against Herod, at least that's what he heard. So he invites Aristobulus, that's his name, over for a pool party. And they have this big pool party, and they play a game of polo in the pool, and he has his men drown Aristobulus in the pool because he's worried about the high priest coming against him. This is the kind of guy that Herod is. He is not a nice guy. He killed his wife's grandfather. He killed a number of people. And when Miriam herself, his favorite wife, when he was worried that she was turning against him, he took care of her too and killed her. Herod the Great was his name. History, if you go to Wikipedia, he's called Herod the Great. Sounds a lot more to me like Herod the Worst or Herod the Terrible. Even the Emperor Augustus from Rome, who Herod would, you know, be serving Rome, even Emperor Augustus said it's better to be Herod's dog than to be one of his children. He was disturbed all right. This is a man with a deep disturbance. And here's what he did. Herod turned his disturbance to control, to violence, and to manipulation. You see it in the story, right? Verse 16, he goes from disturbance to furious, and he goes into action. One little last thing about Herod. Herod died of a terrible disease, and I won't describe it to you because it's terrible and includes maggots. But it was a long, drawn-out, painful disease. And you would think when you're in that moment, you know, when you're dying this long death, that you would kind of step back. But here's what Herod did. He called his sister in, and he said, "Sis, nobody likes me. So nobody's going to grieve my death. So what I want you to do is I want you to gather up all the important people from the area, all the dignitaries, and I want you to put them in one big theater together. or arena together. And when I die, slaughter them, because then people will grieve. At least there will be grieving on the day of my death. This is the guy that Herod is. You might say that today Herod might be seen as successful. He produces a lot, right? He manages kingdoms. And, you know, there's a little violence along the side because you've got to manage things that way, and sometimes people don't listen. So he needs to manipulate. He builds these incredible kingdoms. In fact, he remade the Middle East in this area. But when I think about Herod, I get a little bit tired. I get tired imagining. So when I read my Bible, this is one of the things I do that might be helpful to you when you read your Bible. I try to imagine myself as a character. I try to put myself, even in the bad character sometimes, like, what's going on with Herod? And I get tired pretending to be Herod because inside this guy is just all disturbed, right? There's something going on in his heart, and he's out of control and he doesn't know what to do, so he turns to control, manipulation, and violence. He's always trying to do something to fix it so that he can control the world around him. Herod. Now, what I want to do this morning, I just told you about Herod. I want to tell you about a second character. And then what I'm going to do after the second character, so hold on to your picture of Herod, okay? Can you hang on to that for me? I'm going to give you a second character that's also in this story, and we're going to compare the two characters, and we're going to see something that's similar about the two, and then I'm going to show you something that's different, and then we're going to talk about us, okay? Okay, so we're going to move on. We're going to move to Mary now. Mary is this, is the mother of Jesus. She's kind of the center of this Christmas story along with Jesus. She's this amazing person, and you hear her story unfold in Matthew 1 and 2 and Luke 1 and 2. And one of the things that I did a couple years ago and came back to it again this year is I took the stories in Matthew 1 and 2 and the stories in Luke 1 and 2 and put them together. And when you put them together, there's this interesting timeline that I want to share with you about Mary. First, she's engaged, okay? She's engaged to be married to a man named Joseph. And she's pretty young. In fact, scholars think that she could be as young as 12 years old because that was kind of the earliest you were legally allowed to be married. They think that Mary was probably about 12. And she's engaged. And then something interesting happens. And if you follow the timeline, it's even more interesting. Mary actually disappears. She leaves her hometown. And she's super young, right? Super young. And she's engaged. She leaves. And she goes to her cousin's house, to Elizabeth's house, because her cousin Elizabeth is pregnant. Now, Mary is engaged to Joseph, and if you read through the story, you'll find that Mary goes to visit Elizabeth when Elizabeth is in her sixth month. Now, I need some help. I need some help from moms here this morning, okay? So if you're mom, I need you to do some math for me this morning. She goes to visit Elizabeth in her sixth month, and then we read that Mary stays there for 3 months. 6 plus 3 is... Hey, moms, what happens after 9 months when you're pregnant? You have a baby, right? You see, what happens is Mary leaves to visit Elizabeth. She leaves because she has an encounter with an angel. And the angel comes to Mary and says, you are going to be with child. And not only are you going to be with child, you are going to be with the Son of God. And you're going to give birth to the Son of God. And if you're Mary, I imagine, okay, I'm going to put myself in her. It's a little harder for me to put myself in her head. It's actually easier for me to put myself in Herod's. She's a woman, all that. I've never been pregnant. But I put myself in her place. 12 years old, engaged. Angel tells me I'm pregnant. What do I do? Do I go to my fiancé and tell him? An angel just came to me and told me that I'm carrying the Son of God. I probably don't. My cousin's pregnant. I think I'm going to leave and think about this for a minute. So she leaves. I have a hunch, the scripture doesn't tell us, I have a hunch that Joseph doesn't know when Mary leaves that she's pregnant or going to be pregnant. She leaves. She spends time there, spends 3 months there, and we don't actually know if she leaves right before the baby's born or right after the baby's born, but after 3 months, she goes back. She goes back. And I imagine it happening this way, because again, the timeline's not clear. I imagine it happening this way. Mary goes back, and now she understands that really this is the Son of God. She is pregnant. And again, moms, I need your help. She stays with Elizabeth how many months? 3. If you're pregnant, what happens generally about 3 months' time? A little chubbier in the cheeks, beginning to show a little bit, it's harder to hide. Right? So Mary comes back. Now imagine now, I'm going to put myself in Joseph's place now. Mary said she's leaving to visit her cousin. Mary comes back. Mary's pregnant. I'm Joseph. We're engaged to be married. Okay, I think this is over. You were either with a guy and you left, or you left and were with a guy and it wasn't me, so I think this is over. I imagine that conversation. I bet it didn't go well. I imagine Mary trying to explain it to him. No, seriously, it was an angel, right? I'm Joseph, I'm not buying this, right? So I go away, I sleep that night, whatever, and an angel appears to me as Joseph and says, don't leave her. Mary's telling the truth. This is real. There's something amazing in the story. Here's why I tell you this. I want to read you what one scholar says about Mary here. A girl who became pregnant out of wedlock would have been terrified. The whole social structure was set up for children to be born within marriage. Genealogy and ownership of children was seen as very important. Girls who become pregnant outside of marriage would probably have had to leave their homes and their families. There was the potential of being sold into slavery or being stoned to death. She may have been married off quickly or banished from her home and village, which may have led a woman to prostitution or slavery when she had no way of supporting herself. So, again, you put yourself in Mary's place. Before she goes to visit Elizabeth, the angel comes and says, Mary, you're going to be with child. What happens inside of Mary's heart at that moment? I mean, is she like, awesome? Or is there a great disturbance in Mary's heart? Let me read you from Luke chapter 1, verse 29. Mary was greatly troubled at the angel's words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. Mary is greatly troubled. Of course she would be, right? She's a young girl. She's engaged. She's carrying the Son of God. Like, wouldn't you be troubled? I would be troubled. You would be troubled. There's something going on. So there's something surprising happening in her world. Something is changing. Something is difficult. Something is not the way it's supposed to be. And she can feel it in the inside. And I told you there was something similar between Herod and Mary, and I want to show you that this morning. I don't like to teach Greek a lot, but here's some Greek, because I don't like to teach Greek because I don't know it very well. But here's something important in the Greek. When you read the word disturbed that Matthew uses for Herod, it's the word tarasso. When you read the word greatly troubled for Mary, in Luke, the word is tarasso. They're from the same word. They're both deeply disturbed. Here's what tarasso means. To put in motion, to agitate back and forth, to shake to and fro, to set in motion what needs to remain still or at ease, to trouble, to agitate, causing inner perplexity or emotional agitation from getting too stirred up and upset inside. You see, there's a major similarity here between Herod and Mary. They're both disturbed. There's something important happening in their lives. You see, God is always doing something disturbing. God is always doing something to rattle things up for us. Have you ever had it in your life when things just seem to be going smoothly and then something changes? Something's always happening in the world. Either God is doing something and it's disturbing, or the world is changing and it's disturbing, or you're out of control and it's disturbing. But disturbances happen in us, right? So Herod is disturbed. Mary is disturbed. Here's the truth this morning. You're disturbed. And so am I. I bet behind our best Christmas best that we put forward, there are disturbances in our heart regularly. If you're a human this morning, you probably experience great disturbances in your life. You probably experienced some difficult things that have happened in your life. It happened to Herod, it happened to Mary. They're two very different things, but something's not what we expect. And here's what Herod does. Herod turns inward. Herod turns to himself. Herod turns to his own hands. Herod turns to his own power. Herod turns to control, to manipulation, to violence. Herod's going to make it work, right? Herod's going to get it done. There's a problem, and Herod's going to solve it. There's an issue, and Herod's going to make it better. Does this sound like anybody you know? Sounds like me sometimes. My guess is it sounds like you sometimes, or maybe somebody you live with, who turns disturbance towards control. And we call it being productive. We call it being successful. But sometimes it's just managing the stuff that's going on inside because we don't know what to do about it. But what about Mary? There's something about Mary. That's a joke. Have you seen the movie? There's something about Mary? Okay, anyway, right over your head. There's something about Mary. So on a serious note, there's something different about Mary, right? Herod turns disturbance into control and violence and manipulation, but Mary does something else. Notice this. When the angel first comes, she doesn't immediately leave to go be with Elizabeth. Here's what happens. This is Luke chapter 1, verse 34. How will this be since I'm a virgin? It's a really good question, isn't it? It's kind of like a sex ed question, you know? And Mary's like, she's 12. I don't get it. That's not how they described it to me working, right? And the angel replies that the Holy Spirit will come and gives kind of an explanation. And I read it, and again, if I'm Mary, I'm like, that doesn't really answer my question. That's not good enough. But that's not what she says. And the question isn't a freak out. It's not a pushback. It's not a reaction. It's an honest question. It's an invitation to receive. It's a vulnerability and an availability. Mary goes, tell me more. I don't think I understand. But I'm open. Angel gives that explanation, and then she says this, which is amazing. Luke 1, chapter 38, I am the Lord's servant. May your word to me be fulfilled. How amazing is that, right? God does this incredibly disturbing, crazy thing. And Mary says, I don't understand it. And the angel tries to explain, and she says, I still don't understand it, but you know what? I trust you, God. I trust you. May it be to me as you have said. And then she goes and visits Elizabeth, and the next thing is if you read the whole story in Luke 1, I think it's Luke 1, the next part of the story is she's singing this beautiful song that's a mix of a bunch of psalms that Mary is known for, and Mary's song has become this song that echoes throughout the ages all around the world, especially at Christmas time. She sings this beautiful song of surrender and understanding of who God is. That's like the next piece of the story for her. She surrenders to God. And then she goes back and she faces Joseph. Then we don't get a lot more about Mary in the story, but when Jesus is born in this, you know, this crazy place, this manger, right, with animals, the shepherds are there. I mean, it's a crazy moment. And you find another piece of Mary's story here. Luke says this, Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The Messiah was just born. I mean, come on. Think about this a minute. The most disturbing thing that's ever happened in the universe. God has been born to a woman, to a virgin, to a teenager. And they're in an animal, he's in an animal trough, and there's shepherds around who have seen angel choirs. Like, this is crazy stuff. This is disturbing if anything ever was. I would be agitated, maybe with joy, maybe with fear, maybe with all of those things mixed together. And Mary takes a step back and she ponders these things and treasures them. You know, I'll just admit this, I sometimes find the nativity cheesy at my age, I don't know, but when I get around it at Christmas, there's something inside of me that breaks. I don't want to go, you know, visit the live nativity and do all that, but I go for my kids and then I get there and all of a sudden the Holy Spirit messes with me because I realize this is the moment when the God of the universe came into the world and entered into all the manure and the dust and the dirt and into poverty and all these things. This is the moment. This is the crazy moment where something incredible happens. And I was in Panera this week and I was there a little bit early for a meeting, and all of a sudden I hear this old hymn that I recognize playing at Panera. And it's this hymn that you hear on the radio, and it's the only hymn like this you ever hear on the radio, and it comes at Christmas time, even on stations that are not Christian. Let all mortal flesh keep silent. You know this song? It's got this haunting, eerie bit to it. Here's the first verse. Let all mortal flesh, that's us, keep silent, with fear and trembling stand. Ponder nothing earthly minded, for with blessing in his hand, Christ our God to earth descending, comes our homage to demand. This is the moment. This is the silent night. This is the holy night. And it's the craziest thing you've ever heard of. But at this moment, the entire universe stops. Because Jesus is born. This is the most pregnant moment of all history. It's like the universe takes a deep, long breath. It says, just hang in this moment for a minute, because everything now changes. Everything turns now. You see, disturbances happen, right? They happen in your life, they happen in Herod's life, they happen in Mary's life, they happen in my life. Disturbances happen. They happen to us all the time. You lose a job all of a sudden, and you wake up the next day and you don't know who you are. Your wife walks out, and suddenly your whole life changes. You're sitting with the doctor, and the doctor tells you those words you've never wanted to hear and you can't really understand, and you go home and you're trying to process it because now life changes because this illness doesn't have a cure. Disturbances happen, don't they? I mean, all kinds of them. We could go on and on. You could share yours and I could share mine. And there are two ways to respond. Disturbances happen. There are two ways to respond. One is the Herod's way. The other way is Mary's way. And here's the deal. Mary's way is God's way. Mary's way is the universe's way. Mary's way is Jesus' way. If I had time, I would pull this all out for you. But look what Jesus does. When life gets crazy for Jesus, and it did. When you read the Gospels, life gets crazy for Jesus. What does Jesus do? He pulls back. He's healing people, and the lines are huge, and he does a whole day, and he's like, wow, this is crazy. I'm going to walk away and go on top of the mountainside and pray and ask my Father what I should do in this moment. And Jesus is standing in the middle of a bunch of trees with a bunch of Roman soldiers who are there to arrest him. Talk about disturbance in your heart. Put yourself in that moment. Peter feels the disturbance in his heart, and what does he do? He reaches for his sword, and Jesus says, whoa, 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 step back, take a breath. I think my Father's in control here. Why don't we not manipulate the situation? Why don't we ask what the Father wants? Just before that, Jesus knows he's going to be arrested, and he's with his friends, and I don't know about you, but if I'm in that moment where the Roman soldiers are going to come to get me, I'm like making plans, I'm trying to figure out how to solve this thing or run away or something, and Jesus goes, hey, everybody sit down, we're going to have a meal together. And at this point, I'm going to break bread, and I'm going to pour the cup, and I'm going to share what I've done for you. And then Jesus is hanging on a cross, and he's dying. Talk about disturbance. And Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. It's as if when disturbances happen, Jesus, like the universe when he was born, takes a deep breath, a long breath, inhales and exhales and just sits for a moment in the silence and wonder, listening for the calm, steady voice of the Father doing something else. So this Christmas, you have a choice. You have a choice. Because you all are disturbed. You can walk away and say, what'd you learn in church today? I'm disturbed. Tom told me I'm disturbed. You're all disturbed. Get over it. We're all disturbed. We all get disturbed. But you have a choice with what to do with that disturbance. Many of us, may not be as bad as Herod. Harbor Life is on a little different schedule than the rest of our churches, so I preached there last week, and I preached part of this sermon last week, and I had some people come up to me and said, I really didn't like your sermon. I said, why not? They said, because I'm Herod. Because when I get disturbed, I go into action, and I control things. And maybe I'm not supposed to do that. I understand this. I do the same thing, but we have a choice. And in Christmas, we have an opportunity to focus on this baby Jesus and to do something different. So I want to talk about some practices, and then I'll be done, okay? Some practices in this. So hopefully you've got the concept here. We've been talking about this acronym, BELLS. Bless people. Eat with them. Third one today, listen. Listen. Want to surprise the world? Don't react. Don't we live in a time of reactivity right now? I mean, if you're on social media, you can see it for sure, right? Or just drop a few things in a conversation. Watch what happens. People walk into our elementary schools with guns today. What's that? Violence is erupting all over our cities. Violence of husbands and wives against one another is on an all-time high. We live in a disturbing world right now. And you want to surprise the world? Let's talk about what we do. Let's talk about what we do when we're disturbed. First, I want to just talk. I'm going to give you two practices, okay? Two practices. The first one, I want to talk about your brain. Brain science tells us some important things about our brain. When you get disturbed, what you do is you start to use the part of your brain that is the least effective. Maybe you've heard of it called the lizard brain or the reptilian brain. If you go to a counselor, which you should. I go to a counselor regularly. They help you understand that part of your brain. God designed you in an incredible way that you are not a lizard. That's point two for going home. I'm disturbed and I'm not a lizard, okay? Don't use that part of your brain to react when you're disturbed. God has given you what's called your prefrontal cortex, the higher executive functions of the brain. And you've got to get to that part of your brain to think through these difficult places and to listen to God. Because here's the thing, you cannot listen to God when you're in the place of the reptilian brain. When the world is spinning and it's crazy and you're going after it and you're moving and you're trying to control things and respond. So my kids are very busy, and when they're busy and when they're not busy, they're busy at home, they've got headphones on, and they're doing different things. And how much does it take for me to get their attention sometimes? Do you know that your Father in heaven feels the same way about you? I talked to a lot of you who said, but God doesn't talk to me. I've never heard him. I wonder, are we listening? Have we taken the silence of the universe and stepped back? So here's the practice. I think you get me. Here's the practice. We're going to do it together, okay? Everybody take a long breath in. Now take a long breath out. I said this earlier, it's like the universe inhales and exhales and just takes a break. Sometimes you just need to do that to calm yourself down. Physiologically, you're built so that you can move to a different part of your brain. Funny story, do not tell my doctor this, okay? I've been doing breathing exercises for years like this. When I go to the doctor, when I'm sitting in the waiting room, I do breathing exercises, and every time, almost every time, I go in, they say, are you a runner? Because my blood pressure is so low. You can literally change your body. How do I know this? Last week I went to the doctor and I had high blood pressure because I forgot, and I got there late and I was anxious, and I went in and she told me the numbers. I'm like, are you kidding me? I've never seen that before, you know? I realized, oh, I didn't trick them this time. Don't do that. It's not really healthy for you. you should let your doctor know what's really going on. But the reality is God created you as a person in a body with a brain and with a breath, and when you get disturbed, something literally happens in your brain that shuts off your ability not only to act appropriately and be rational and reasonable, but to listen to God. Sabbath. Sabbath is a rest. It's not a law. Jesus says, this is a gift to you. Stop. Take a breath. What if every day you sat and you just breathed in, breathed out until you were calm, and then you said, God, I'm listening. What if the next time you felt anxious in a conversation with your spouse because you disagree with something, you just stopped and said, just a minute, and you took some breaths, and you listened to God, and you said, Father, what would you have me do at this moment? Do you think something would change? Now, you hear about things called mindfulness a lot lately, breathing techniques of mindfulness or Eastern meditation. Let me tell you this, Christians have been doing this long, long, long ago. You can read about the ancient spirituality and breath prayers. If you want to know more about that, I would love to talk to you about it. But for the practice for right now, what if you just found time alone with God and you calmed yourself down enough to maybe hear his voice? Like my kids, if you took the headphones off, if you stopped what you're doing, you know how many times I have to say to my kids, you're not listening. Oh, I'm listening, but they're doing something else. No, stop. Look me in the eyes. Pay attention. Practice one, pay attention. Second one, notice Mary, when she has this disturbing thing happen, she not only is calm, but she asks a question. I don't understand. And then she submits. There's something, I won't go into detail on this either, but Jeremy can help you with this, called the Kairos circle. Let's put that up real quick a second. This is something that many of us do as a spiritual practice. Kairos is just an important moment. It's a disturbing moment. You can call it that. A disturbing moment happens. I'm just going to go through the two questions. The first question is, what is God saying to me? That's the listening part. Second part, what am I going to do about it? Here's what Mary does. What are you saying, God? What are you saying, angel? Let it me. Be to me as you have said. What are you saying to me, God? If you never get there, you're never going to get the doing part. And then you're just going to build castles and fortresses and control things like Herod did. What if you surprised the world this Christmas by entering these kinds of practices in your daily life that you stopped and you had silence and you listened. Instead of controlling, manipulating, or building your kingdom, you stepped back and said, Father, what does your kingdom look like? One last picture for you. Some of you know the Advent wreath, and this is set up a little differently than a wreath, but traditionally the wreath has the white candle in the center, and the white candle is the Christ candle. And on the outside of that, we have hope, joy, love, and peace. Because here's the truth. You don't want to live disturbing lives. You don't want to live lives of chaos and control. I don't think. Don't you want to live a life of hope, a life of joy, a life of peace, and a life of love? If you do, this is an invitation. If you do, Jesus is at the center of that. But the only way you can find him is if you're looking and you're listening and you're paying attention. Let's pray. Father, for some of us, this is the only silence that we have experienced in a long time. God, would you help us to calm ourselves down, to set ourselves before you, to listen to your heart, to listen to your words. Let our mortal flesh keep silent, and may we give our homage to you. May we bow before you and be humble like Mary was, to say, let it be to me as you have said.